June 2nd, 2020, TeamSpeak for Tangerine SDR. I was a little nervous when I got here. Bill was the only one here, and I thought maybe we'd had a Zoom meeting, and I didn't get the message. So I guess we didn't since Nathaniel's here. So anyway, I'll go down the roll call. This week, I've been working on some SVG programming that is in web pages and will be useful in providing feedback relative to data sources. So that's about it for me. Next on the list is Mike, AAAK, shown as mic muted and recording, and we thank Mike for posting the TeamSpeak sessions to tangerinesdr.com in the TS archive directory. Next, we have Nathaniel, W2NAF. Go ahead, Nathaniel.
Hi, Dave. Thanks a lot. Things are going fine here. I'm not sure that there's a whole lot of new news since last week, just moving along with trying to work on the research stuff. I guess Dev has driven up to Scranton, so he's in Scranton now. But he apparently just basically, I guess, drove through the night or so. So he just got there this afternoon, so he said he needed some sleep, so he's not joining us this evening. But yeah, that's moving along. We might also have, I also have an undergraduate student working with me for the summer, and she might join us later this evening if she figures out how to get TeamSpeak
User
working.
Joined your channel.
And I think that's about it for now. W2NF, back to Nat.
Well, fine business. And Nathaniel, if you ever want to try a Zoom meeting, you're welcome to try it and call it. Just announce it on the Tangerine SDR list as well as the HAMSI list.
Okay, thanks. I mean, it's very easy for me to set that up if you guys want me to.
Well, we talked about it 2 weeks ago, and I think the holiday got in the way.
Yeah, so if you want me to set one up for next week, if you and Scotty just give me the word, I'll send out an invitation and set one up for everybody.
Very good. Well, next on the list is Tom, N5EG. Holman, can you mute your thing till your turn to speak?
Oh, I thought I was muted.
We're getting an echo off of you.
Oh, I didn't know. Okay, I don't know how to do it. I wasn't really pushing a shift button. I don't know what's happening. So let me log out and log back in. Sorry.
Go ahead, Tom. It's your turn. Tom, N5EG, are you there?
Oh, I'm sorry. Can you hear me now?
Yes, just fine.
Okay, very good. I'm used to pressing the space bar to talk in Zoom, and I got to remember to press the right Alt key to talk in TeamSpeak. So I'm already backwards. I spent this week working on documenting the cross-loop receive antenna, and it's amazing how much data can be lost in 5 years' time. I was unable to find the schematic. I found an older version. And I'm sorry, I'm hearing a really bad echo.
The echo's from human.
Is that coming from me? I don't know.
Yeah, okay. You just need to mute your mic.
Okay.
At the top, there should be a thing that's a microphone button with an X on it. There you go. Go ahead, Tom.
Oh, okay. So I've been working on documenting the cross-loop receive antenna, and I had to open it up and reconstruct the schematic by hand because I couldn't find it on the computer. And it's funny, bits that are more than 5 years old find special hiding places on disk drives. I don't know how they do that. We had a good chat about it on Thursday. And so what I've decided to do is to document three amplifiers, A, which was the as-built unit, which has very high dynamic range, which was needed in the particular experiment, but it's a really very deaf preamp. An amplifier B, which is sort of a moderate gain, moderate overload resistant amp, and then an amplifier C, which we talked about on Thursday, which is a real low noise, very high gain amp that may not have quite as much dynamic range. So I'm working on that, and hopefully we'll get it out here soon. So back to the group.
That's fine business, Tom. I was amazed. I was able to find the actual last version of your book in 98 in electronic form in PageMaker, and we were able to get it converted over to PDF. So I was amazed how much of that we could recover, and apparently Adobe products still read that format.
Oh, absolutely amazing.
So anyway, next on the list, we have Scotty, WA2DFI. Go ahead, Scotty.
Hello, Dave. You copy me okay?
Yes, you're nice and clear.
Okay, I had to swap the mic out here, so I want to make sure it was working. So anyway, thanks for running everything as usual. Great job. And looks like people have been busy this week. I've been kind of busy too. First up, the magnetometer is pretty much finished, routed, complete, the bomb's done, got everything costed, ready to go. So I wanted to put it out there and let everyone look at it and find all the things wrong with it that I can't see, and before we go off and do anything with it. So I'm going to do that later today, send it out. Now, I wonder if Nathaniel, whether you want me to send it to the list, or because what I'm going to do is I'm going to send just a placement for the top, the assembly drawing for the top, and then the schematic, and people can see what we did from there. So whether there's a select few that have been working on it that might want to see it, but maybe everyone wants to see it, I'm not sure which. Anyway, also I've been working with the Altera FAE and the local rep here to get some of my questions answered on the implementation of the RAM, because it has some conflicting notes in the documentation as far as how it needs to be implemented on the board, and as far as what you can do with the remaining pins in the bank. And in fact, even worse than that, the speed grader part that I need to use for the RAM is not in the price list. So we're trying to figure out exactly how you're supposed to build a board with a -6 part, because it's required by the RAM, but yet you can't buy a -6 part. So that's yet to be resolved. So we're working on that and on the data engine. So that's about it for this week, Dave. Back to you.
Well, fine business. So next on the list, we have Bill, AB4EJ. Go ahead, Bill.
Well, thanks, Dave. Been busy here, like everybody else. Had some very difficult overhead this week as the XYL was in the hospital. She has some kind of bacterial infection of the lungs and it's not COVID, because she passed 3 different tests for COVID and was always negative. Of course, they say that doesn't necessarily mean anything anyway, but anyway, she was in the hospital for a few days because she was getting dehydrated for various reasons. Anyway, we have her back and she's feeling a lot better now, and you can tell because the way she's very feisty. as far as on this project, several things been working on, simulating a few things. I wrote a little simulator to simulate the central control system, and now on the single board computer that is the local host, I have the heartbeat working. So whenever the tangerine is up and online, it will shake hands with the central control system at certain intervals and say, "I'm here, do you have anything for me? I'm here, do you have anything for me?" And that'll be a configurable check. So maybe it'll do it every 10 seconds, every 60 seconds or whatever. And if the central control system would like to request some data, it has a chance to reply saying, "Yes, send me the data you have between this time and that time." And the when the heartbeat occurs, the local host will be telling the central system what data mode it's in. Is it in ring buffer or is it in fire hose, or what is it? And it'll be able to be in multiple modes at the same time. And so anyway, I've also been simulating some things that we might want to do with the tangerine. using my own homebrew system, my own homegrown system. So I added a Leo Bodnar GPS DO to my Flex radio, and I'm running a Spectrum Lab on four different slices to observe what is going on in the ionosphere at 5, 10, 15, and 20 megahertz. And it's very interesting to see that, and I talked with Nathaniel about earlier this afternoon, you see different things on the different bands. And even when it's getting dark, I see that the 15 megahertz band, actually the frequency of the reflected signal actually increases a little bit, which is counterintuitive. Anyway, I believe we'll be able to use a tangerine for this, and I believe we're going to do some fancy new science by comparing how the different bands react as the ionosphere moves, and being able to compare that all the way down to the second, and see how different things occur. Anyway, that's what's going on here. Back to Ned.
Fine business, Bill. And next on the list, we have Dan in for XWE. Go ahead, Dan.
Thank you, Dave, and hello, everyone. Well, a pretty busy week. Been messing around with scripts, and I actually have three of them up and running and working very well. One compiles GNU radio on the Raspberry Pi, which is kind of interesting because it's about a 6 to 7 hour compile. The other one does FL Digi on the Raspberry Pi, which is much quicker. It takes about an hour. And the third one is Lin HPSDR on the Raspberry Pi. So if anybody would like to give it a try, I'll post the script someplace. The difficulty was not so much in writing the scripts. That was pretty straightforward and relatively simple. The difficulty was, especially with GNU Radio, difficulty was tracking down all of the dependencies. And it took me literally 2 days working full time to figure out why I could not compile GNU Radio Companion on the Raspberry Pi. And it turned out, I recognized pretty quickly that it was a dependency problem, but it took me really 2 days to figure out what library I had to compile initially or install initially in order to get the software to compile. Anyway, it's been an interesting experience. One of the reasons I did this is I would like to, since we'll probably have fairly consistent hardware, which is kind of nice with the scripts, across the project, I think I could probably automate the installation of the software pretty easily with some little script thingies that would automate the installation in Linux in the Raspberry Pi operating system, as it's now called. The other thing I did was I was kind of browsing one morning online, and then I saw an announcement that they just released an 8 gigabyte version of the Raspberry Pi 4, and before I could think through it rationally, I ordered one. It arrived on Friday, and now I'm trying to get a couple other things together so that I have an operating system. So that should be interesting too. Anyway, that's kind of the story from here. Back to you, Dave.
Well, Dan, if you can either drop a link or send, I don't know if the scripts are small enough, you can send them. I'd be interested in having a set of those.
Okay, great. Yeah, I can actually send them to you, Dave, and I think I'll probably post them on the iQuad Labs website.
Okay. Do you have an interest in putting them on Tangerine SDR website?
Sure, we could do that. That's not a problem.
Okay.
Well, that would be very helpful, yes.
I'll do that as well.
Hey, Dan, okay. Have you tried compiling these, running the compiles on the Odroid?
I have not, but it should be fairly simple to do it. The dependencies might have slightly different names or at least slightly different versions, but I think it would work. I just haven't tried it.
Just be interesting to get a real-world example of whether the Odroid is going to be that much faster or not.
Yeah, that's true. I'm kind of interested to see how the newer Raspberry Pi does. I've watched a couple, I think ETA Prime and also Explaining Computers have both done little blurbs on the 8 gigabyte version. I think their consensus has been that it really doesn't make much of a difference for most software, because even if you open up lots of tabs and do lots of stuff, you really don't use that much RAM.
Well, Dan, the real hard part is tracking down all those dependencies, because the ones I've tried so far, there's always two or three dependencies they forget to mention.
Oh, you got that right. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. And it was especially true on this one because, I mean, I read the official document from GNU Radio on compiling it on the Raspberry Pi, and they missed, I think, 4 or 5 dependencies. I mean, the problem I had is it would compile, but it wouldn't compile all of the modules. So I had a heck of a time getting GNU Radio Companion to compile. And again, it's just because it was missing a couple of dependencies.
One other thing I might suggest is, does your GNU Radio compile Tom's driver?
It does not, but I think I could add that in there pretty easily.
That would be nice as well.
Okay, I'll look at that this evening. I'm actually waiting for the Amazon guy to come. It's 9:15 here, but I guess they deliver up until 10 o'clock at night, and I was assured of what I was waiting for would be arriving, so that that should be helpful.
Well, thanks a lot. We have a couple other people that have arrived. Next on the list is David N1HAC. Go ahead, David.
Well, welcome. Hello to everyone tonight. As Tom was mentioning, we had a pretty extensive discussion on the HAMSci Science meeting about loop antennas and preamps, and I was able to share some of what we've been using in our research designed by Mike Trimpe, some people might know of. And I guess we'll be continuing to collaborate and mix and match preamps and loop designs and things and see what we can work up with that. And I'm also working on, as I think I've mentioned before, putting a VLF antenna together, because I'm in particular working on a project, a rocket that's going to be flying, well, at this point, maybe January. It's actually picking up VLF signals from up there. For instance, the primary signal source is NAA, the 24 kilohertz coming out of Cutler, Maine. So we want some ground telemetry as well as from the rocket. And then one further thing, I was interested by the GNU Radio on the Raspberry Pi, because we're actually using that in our AM Doppler project. And I think we have Radio Companion. That's how I take a look at signal strength and what might be strong interfering signals. The acquisition hardware software is a little bit different. Well, quite a bit different. Does a lot of FFTs, get things down to their hertz-wide order of magnitude channels. But I'm not the one who set up the software. Our IT person in the physics department got that running. But I guess he must have found all those dependencies, because it's working for us. I guess that's it for me.
Well, fine business, David. And next on the list, we have Elizabeth, I believe from Houston. And Elizabeth's shown as Way. I assume she's listening. And I did see a comment where she typed in, or maybe Tom typed to her. Elizabeth, do you have any comments? Well, I'm going to go on down the list. Next, we have Homan. He KD2MCR. Go ahead, Homan. You're unmuted, but I don't hear anything. Well, when you get that working, just jump in and give your comments. One other person is Veronica and has mic muted. So if you have any comments, you can either type at the bottom or you can turn on your mic and talk to us.
Veronica is my new summer student, and she just finished up her freshman year at the University of Scranton, and she is a student in physics, and so she's going to be working with me this summer. I think we're going to be working on geomagnetic storms and the RBN and Whisper response to that. So this is her first time using TeamSpeak, so she may have some trouble with the settings tonight.
Well, Nathaniel, this is another reason maybe we should switch over to Zoom, because it seems to be not a problem for the regulars, but for new people, it seems to be an impediment.
Yeah, I will definitely switch out. I mean, I can even set up the Zoom now if you wanted and just send everyone a link right now.
That'd be fine. Just send a link, either a regular link or just one a week ahead.
Yeah, so this week I'll just set up a regular recurring Zoom for this time each week.
Sounds good, and we can all log in, and one of us can call the roll. It doesn't have to be me, but that should work.
Do you have everyone's email address, Nathaniel?
I probably don't have everyone's. I was going to send it out to the Tangerine list.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I can send that to the Tangerine list and to HamSci.
We do have Holman.
Hi, everybody. Sorry about the trouble. I forgot that I actually reinstalled my software on my computer because I did some fresh installation of the operating system. I forgot that, all the settings of my TeamSpeak are messed up. So I'm still trying to find a way to convert it to push to talk mode. So before that, I'll try to reset up my TeamSpeak. But basically, I'm still trying to, since I'm not a really Raspberry Pi and Linux savvy, so I'm still struggling to install connect the stuff that Dave sent me, the magnetometer. I'm still trying to understand how things work. But otherwise, I have no big update from my side.
Holman, do you have any Linux machine at your office or access to?
I do have Raspberry Pi 2 and 3. So, and then Dave just sent me some better instruction, because I need a little bit of a step-by-step instruction. So I just received it from him. So that's where I'm going that's the way I'm going to set up the system.
Well, his stuff is very normal standard Linux C code, so there is no real problem with it other than just typing make once you have, but you do have to have a compiler, but it runs very well on any Linux machine I've tried. The only problem is if you don't have the GPIO pins, it's a lot more complicated to get to the I2C.
No, I guess I have all the stuff that necessary stuff. So it's just that the manual didn't really specify how to like connect all these different boards and what type of connectors I need, so that kind of stuff. So otherwise, yeah, it wasn't really a trouble of the Linux system setting. It's more of a hardware setting. So, but I'm going to try based on the manual that he sent. So,
you need some students to help you.
I haven't had any in-person human being interaction for 2 months, more than 2 months. Other than cashier at the grocery store.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, that's kind of the way we are right now. But anyway, glad that you got it. Seemed to work. Is there anybody? Oh, Orville. I missed Orville in 8WQ. And Orville, do you have any comments? No comments. So we're open for general discussion.
Scotty, so you were saying you wanted to know whether or not it'd be okay to send the magnetometer information out to the list?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's kind of a question of whether it would be of interest to everyone or just to the few who worked on them.
It's certainly fine. There's probably more people than just the ones who worked on it who would be of interest. I guess the question is, like, how much extra comments do you want from other people? Or do you want to just get, like, a focused answer first?
Well, probably a focused answer first, because the ones who have looked at it already are the ones I'm most interested in, because they'll have comments on whether the things that I did agreed with their comments or not. But I guess the more eyes look at it, the better.
Well, I would definitely make sure that Jules gets in on the list.
Yeah, maybe you send it to the main people first, and then after they have a crack at it, then you send it out to everybody.
Yeah, yeah, okay, I'll do that.
And Scotty, definitely give me a copy. I'm interested in looking at it. Thanks.
Yeah, I would definitely give you a copy, and Nathaniel and Dave, and I mean anyone who wants a copy is certainly welcome to it. It's not secret. It's just that it needs to not be dispersed widely until we get it finished.
That sounds good to me.
Sounds good to me.
Maybe we could actually put it up on the website, I guess.
Yeah, it's kind of, if you put it on the website, you're effectively publishing it.
Yeah, that's true. So I'd like to at least have a crack at making a few before we publish it to the world.
Well, we can do it either way. And be sure you have your license statements in the corners.
Yeah, they're all on there. I think I'll talk to Ackerman about it, because this is funded by Tapper, so I want to make sure that we abide by the rules that they have in place.
Yes, I understand.
But it has OHL plastered all over it.
Yes, I did see that.
David, on another question, I'm wondering, I'm trying to finalize the article on the cross-loop antenna, and I'd like to put in a reference to the amplifier that you talked about. I think it's in Eric Nichols' book, but do you have a figure number? Or alternatively, could I use the schematic you showed us on Thursday?
You can use the schematic, and the schematic actually doesn't appear in the Nichols' book. It's kind of left out. It shows a block diagram, essentially, but not an actual schematic. So I can certainly get you the schematic.
Yeah, if you could do that, I'd appreciate it. I've got the schematic of my first and an improved version in there, and I'd like to include yours because I think, you know, for the vast majority of folks, the one that you have is a much better design.
Right, and we actually have a printed circuit board that we build it on.
Okay, any information you can give me, it'd be great, and I'll go ahead and include it in that article along with the, you know, mechanical construction and all that stuff.
Yeah, very good.
Nathaniel, I wanted to mention that was a good meeting. I didn't attend, but I did watch it virtually.
Oh, good. I'm glad that recording worked.
Yep, worked just fine. And very interesting topics.
Thank you very much. It's nice to hear everything that people are working on. And I saw there was a lot of interest on the HAMSI listserv today about the antennas as well.
Yes.
Yeah, I haven't looked at the antenna designs. Does it look like it's going to be inexpensive enough that they could be fabricated easily by an average ham?
Well, I think it depends which design we take. I mean, so Tom, you know, if we go with the cross-polarized circular loops, I think Tom is the one who's working on the design for that right now. You know, there certainly are a number of options that probably could be made inexpensively.
Yeah. When did the emails on this come out? I haven't seen any on the Tangerine list.
They went out on the HAMSI list. So I think what happened was I sent the message about the HAMSI meeting that we had the other day out to both Tangerine and the HAMSI list, and some people on the HAMSI list ran with the conversation.
Okay, thanks. I just got the wrong list. Appreciate it.
Sure, no problem.
Yeah, Dave, can you post the link to the video for Elizabeth?
Yeah, I'm looking for it.
Oh, okay.
It's in my email, but I got to look at the right string, and it's not usually the top message in the string.
The video from the HAMSI meeting this Thursday?
Yeah, I see something about telecom notes.
Yeah, I actually do have it archived on the website. It's just buried a little bit. If you click on Get Involved and then down under HAMSI Telecons, there's a link for the archival recordings.
Nathaniel, do you want to just forward your note, the HAMSI note, to the Tangerine list?
Yeah, or I can just put the link right here. Yeah, yeah. I can just forward the whole thing out to the Tangerine
list. Yeah, I'm looking at the email right now.
Is that the right one that I put in?
I'm not sure. If you go to the link I posted, it's the last one. Yes,
that's correct.
Yeah, I think that's right.
So, Elizabeth, the first one. Oh, one other interesting thing. Many people on the HPSDR list have been complaining about our wiki being down. It is back up now, and I am in the process of scraping the data off of the wiki so that if it ever goes down, I can rebuild it as static web pages. It's interesting, in there is a link to all of the FPGA programming lessons by Kurt. And that was from somewhere around 12 years ago. So do we have any budding FPGA programmers?
Well, I thought for sure Scotty would speak up.
Well, Scotty and I are about the only ones who are willing to even look at it. Maybe Dan.
Sorry, I was reading about the Phoenix riots. What about FPGAs? My ears perked up.
So when we had problems with our wiki on OpenHPSDR being down, Bill Tracy did get it back. And the way he got it back was he deprecated the PHP version. So I went ahead and I'm scraping all the data out of the wiki so that if we need to rebuild those web pages, I can.
So you want some proofreaders or contributors?
Well, not right at the moment. I'm just, so what I did is I'm just copying all the web pages and all the pictures. And it takes a while. There's quite a bit of data there. And that, wikis by nature are written and edited by a large number of people.
So, and this relates to FPGAs, how?
There was a link to all the videos that Kurt did back in the late 2000s.
Oh, Kirk's videos. Oh, yeah, that's terrible if we lose those.
So we have a list of all those, and it's pretty interesting, some of the stuff that's in there. I hadn't spent that much time in the wiki for a long time.
So are the links gone, or have you found them, or what's the status?
They're all back right now. But the trouble is we're behind a version in PHP, and when we upgrade the PHP, we have to upgrade the wiki, and that's a fairly big task.
So that's what broke everything?
Yes. And both Bill and I have a lot of other things to do than rebuild wikis.
Yeah, that's for sure.
I also had a question. Do you know, Scotty, Steve G4, I can't remember his last, all his call sign, who was the HPSDR listserv person, and Lyle, who's a VE3, I think. I haven't heard from them in a long time, and I don't know if they're still around or still active in SDR or not. What? Have you ever heard from them?
The only Lyle I know is Lyle Johnson. But Steve, you're talking, I think, G4GXL, I want to say. He's big in QRP ARC.
Yes, he is. And he was president for a while.
Yes, he was. In fact, I gave a talk there 1 year when he was the one that invited me. So that explains that link there. But I haven't been to QRP or FDIM or anything for so many years. I don't know if he's still active or not.
Well, and he's in the British Isles, so it makes it a little harder to bump into him.
Yeah, really, especially bumping into him at Dayton, since there isn't any Dayton this year.
Yes. So anyway, they were our list email list managers, and I was trying to find I'll have to try to get a hold of them somewhere. But I thought I'd ask you while you were here.
Does Don, was he involved in the email at all or just the web?
Just the web, and I kind of took over that, and he kind of said thank you and went on his way.
Yeah, he had some health issues that were causing him trouble. And I often wonder how he's doing these days.
If I remember right, he doesn't live too far from me.
Yeah, he is from the town that I was born in.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, so it's pretty weird. There's an article in QST on Field Day in 2005 about the 50-year reunion of these teenagers who did Field Day in Rockford, Illinois in 1955. And they did it in a park that was less than 1 mile from my house in Rockford when I lived there.
And you were a ham at that point?
I was 2 years old.
Oh, okay.
So not quite a ham yet, but working on it.
You were working on the code.
I was working on sticking bobby pins into light sockets. That was my contribution when I was two.
You know, Scotty, I did exactly the same thing at the same age. I managed to blow fuses even at that age.
Yeah, and my mom told me that I'd stick the thing in the socket with one hand and leave a big black mark on the wall. I'd be sitting there with my fingers all curled up, wondering what happened. And then she'd clean it all up and replace the fuse. And then I would do it again with the other hand. I'm a slow study.
Were you trying to send spark?
I guess. But it really marred the wall with the arcs.
Well, this explains a lot, Scotty.
Yeah, doesn't it, though? This explains why I flew a 160-meter balloon at my house across the street from 78 kV power lines and had the balloon short against the power lines 2 times.
Oh, geez.
By the way, 78 kV pretty much vaporizes number 20 wire.
Yeah, but the important part is, did you get a QSL card back as a result?
From the power company, you mean?
Well, you know, I used to do a lot of things like that as a kid, and I don't know how many folks remember the great blackout that occurred in the Northeast. I don't remember exactly. It was either 1967 or 68.
65.
Everything from the from Pennsylvania all the way to Maine and all the way to west to Ohio completely went down, and I got blamed for it, at least at my house.
But were you guilty?
No, I was in my room working on something else. I didn't have any hand in it. I wish I had, because that would give some good bragging rights, but unfortunately I didn't.
It was November 9th, 1965.
65, okay. Well, I didn't remember the, but I, even by that age, even by that time, I had enough experience with blacking out the house. Blacking out the entire Northeast was a little bit above my pay grade, even at that age.
I will offer that's when I learned that one can see by starlight.
They're a lot brighter when the light's off.
Yeah, but our eyes are designed to see by starlight. When there's no electric light around, discover you can still see.
Yeah, and what is a full moon? That's about 1/200th sun?
Something around there.
I know a guy who has a solar array, and he says he can get a few milliamps of current off of a solar array on full moon nights.
I think it has an albedo around 11% or something. So if it was 100%, it would be a full sun.
That imagine that if we wanted to solve our energy crisis, all we have to do is launch enough mirrors on the moon to reflect as much sunlight as possible.
So we'd have continuous day, or nearly, not quite continuous, but at least larger coverage.
Yeah, at least wherever the moon is mostly full.
I'd like to jump in here for a minute. Let's see, and introduce Veronica. I think she has her microphone working. She's the undergraduate student who's starting out this summer, and she's also going to be the inaugural University of Scranton Ham Radio Club president.
Oh, congratulations,
hello.
Veronica.
Outstanding.
Thank you.
Oh, you don't have to mute your mic that fast.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure because I'm not using headphones or anything, so I didn't know if there'd be feedback. I left it unmuted.
If you use push to talk, there'll be no feedback.
I wasn't sure. How do I set that up, the push to talk?
Tools, options, capture, and then you have a push to talk option.
Tools, option. Oh, okay. Thank you.
And it's the right-hand Alt key is the default, which I find just fine. So, Nathaniel, do you still want me to dig out those Atlas systems?
Yes, I do. In fact, Veronica is one of the people I'd like you to send one to.
Okay, I'll dig them out probably this week, see if I can find them. Find enough stuff to at least get her started.
Fantastic. If you wouldn't mind sending her one, if you could send me one, and I have one other student who I think would like one, if that would be okay.
Well, is she in your town? Well, she's going to the University of Scranton, so she lives there, right? I just should ask her. I could send them both to you maybe to save some money on shipping.
Well, we're in this funny situation right now with the whole COVID thing. So she's probably about an hour west of me. But yeah, if you got them to me, you could probably get them to all the students.
Well, just Veronica, if you could send Nathaniel your shipping address, he can forward it on to me and I'll ship it directly to you.
That sounds like a good plan.
Might as well let the U.S. Postal Service take advantage of the virus situation.
Absolutely. Yeah, I guess I should say Veronica's about an hour east of me. I'm an hour west of her.
Nathaniel, have you used an Atlas system before?
I have not. Tell us about it.
Well, it's quite nice. It's a little bit different because it has a base plane, and then you have boards for receive and for transmit. I don't know if Scotty has those. Be sure he sends you his LPU, the power supply. But it's a wonderful radio, and I have two of those, and I use them all the time.
That sounds great. I'm looking it up on the HPSDR wiki right now.
Yep. I run the web page for that, and it has all the documents there, and it's the whole thing's open source.
That's fantastic. So is this an SDR, right?
Yes, and it has it has the same data format as your Red Pitaya, Scotty's IQ2, and this and Hermes.
So then it goes, and then does that go out over an Ethernet interface?
Yeah, if he sends you the Metis board, are you sending a Metis or an Aussie, Scotty?
Probably it's going to be Aussie because I'll see if I have Metis boards. If I have those, I'll send those. But this is kind of the leftover test bed stuff that we hoarded for when we were going to do future production that never materialized.
So, Nathaniel, if it's a Metis board, it can be over a gigabit Ethernet or 10 base Ethernet if that's a limit. And the Aussie board is over USB.
Okay, I see. I see the two different boards here on the HPSDR wiki.
So, Veronica, do you know how to solder? Well, the LPU will require some assembly. She says she's having trouble with her mic. Good. So you can assemble the LPUs then. They're not too hard. They have some big surface mount parts on them. So, and then the rest is through holes, so it's a mix.
And at the Open HPSDR site, there are good manuals for each of the boards.
I think this is nice too, because when I've seen some of the software, like they refer to all these names, like the Mercury and Ozzy and Metis and all this other stuff. And when it's just emulated in your Red Pitaya, it's hard to imagine what these things are. But actually seeing the real boards helps makes a little bit more sense.
Yeah, well, and if you have any questions, I'm more than happy. Scotty and I and Dan went through all that at one time, and we can help answer questions.
Yeah, between Dan and I, we've tested every single one of the boards that are out in people's hands.
That's great. Thank you.
Can you remind me what the FPGA series is that you're using in Tangerine?
The first one we're going to come out with is a Max 10, the 10M50, 50,000 logic elements. That's an Intel part.
Oh, Intel.
Well, but Intel
not
bought Altera.
Or Altera.
Intel bought Altera, so it's Intel now.
Oh,
but
it's
still
an
called
Altera.
Altera.
Okay.
And it's got both their names on it in some of the documentation.
I'm more familiar with Xilinx, but I can take a look and see if that's something I might be able to help with.
Well, actually, it's interesting. I've been talking to the rep today, and I can't seem to get a commitment from them on the -6 part on the Max 10. And he's telling me that he might be able to get me a better price on a Cyclone 10. So if I could get a larger Cyclone 10 for the same money, and I could get a -6 speed grade, we might be switching it to Cyclone 10. I hate to do it at this late a date, but if I can't get the -6 speed grade, it puts the gigabit Ethernet and the DDR3 at risk, and I don't want to take that risk.
Scotty, the one nice thing about that Cyclone 10 is it has SATA lines, and you can then treat them inside Linux just like a dev file.
Are you sure the LP has SATA? Because I think that requires transceivers.
I'm not sure, but I was talking this over with Phil, and he's talked about resurrecting the DFC, and he's thinking of a Cyclone 10.
Well, the there's a Cyclone 10 GX with transceivers, and there's a Cyclone 10 LP, LP standing for low power, that does not have transceivers. And the LP varies from, I don't know, some small thing, some small toy one, up to 120K LE. So not quite as big as the Cyclone 5, but bigger than the Max 10 we were looking at.
Yeah, he's thinking of the Cyclone 10 GX. But the price is very good.
Yeah, that's the thing is, since the die is smaller, they may actually be able to get me a better end price than I can get on the Max 10.
Yeah, I noticed that when I was doing this work with Phil. Phil was interested in the Max 10s, and when I told him there was no GX series, he went, well, we'll go back to the Cyclones.
Yeah, no transceivers in the Max series, sorry. Too bad. That'd be a nice addition.
It makes some of the programming tasks a lot simpler.
Well, and you can't use PCI Express if you don't have transceivers.
That's right.
But this first version was not intended to do any of that, so... The original 10 was a low-cost Max 10 one, and then the high-performant Cyclone 5 one, which we'll see how that works out. The problem with Cyclone 10 and all that is you have external programming PROMs, and you know you take a step backwards in the complexity department compared to the Max 10 with everything's on board.
Yeah, I understand.
So I prefer to stick with the Max 10, but when I get the prices for the speed grade I need, assuming I can even get it, I'm not happy. It's adding too much to the price.
Yep. Well, that's their newer product, though, isn't it?
A Cyclone 10's newer.
Oh, the Cyclone series goes back a lot further than the Max 10 series.
Yes, right. That the Cyclone 10 is post-Cyclone 5. And the Max 10 is actually Cyclone 4 architecture.
Ah, well, that's what a whole lot of radios have been built out of.
Yeah, so the cell the LEs are like Cyclone 4, and then they added the ROM, and they added the ability to have two copies and, you know, boot one if you get an error, boot the other one, and or select whichever you want to do.
That feature is really nice. And I think that's a lot of FPGAs are going to that kind of arrangement with two flash memories that alternate without human interference.
Yeah, and I still can't get my head around this. How we may have to have some circuitry around this to actually be able to do that, because on the Cyclone, what is it, Cyclone 3 that Hermes uses, is that right?
Yes. And Cyclone 3 was also the Metis.
Yeah. So on the when you're done programming those with your programmer, what do you actually, I noticed there's an output, a digital I/O that actually goes around and pulls the reprogram button, a reprogram line on the part. Do you use that?
No, we don't. Or at least we didn't. And that's the whole point of that toggle switch in both Metis and Hermes, was you toggled it and it would let you write. It makes it so you can't write to the lower part of the flash memory, where in the so when you're programming the board regularly, you're only putting the radio code in there. The bottom part of the memory is the bootloader, which doesn't get erased.
Right, and those the way you select boot from top or boot from bottom is with the jumper, right?
Correct. And everybody disliked the jumper intensely, but they were never supposed to really fool with that if they could help it. It's people would do some sort of programming thing and you'd lose a packet and then they'd think it was dead and they'd then start fussing with it and usually make more problems than they actually fixed.
Yeah, but with the Max 10, if you blow the main image and it won't boot anymore, then the thing will automatically dump that and boot the bootloader image, which then you can use to load the main image back again.
Correct. And that's a really nice feature for programmable hardware.
Right. But if we went to Cyclone 10, we would have to somehow invent that feature.
I don't know if it has that or not.
I don't believe it does, but I'm just haven't used a Cyclone 10 yet, so I have to read up more on it. First thing I got to find out, I got to beat the guy up to give me a good price, and he's got to convince me with that first before he can pry my dead hands loose of the Max 10, Max 5. Out of the Max, because pretty much everything's designed already, so I don't want to start over.
Yeah, but I mean, we have a process, and there is a process you can do it with the single memory. If you divide it and you just have to put a little extra piece in there for the fallover.
So what we should do is we should try implementing the programming on a Max 10 board, like the one that you and I both have.
Yeah, we could. It's like, I don't know if you know, I'm still working part-time, and it's one of those things that I'm doing stuff, and that goes till September, my part-time work. I still was teaching classes spring semester. My summer class disappeared because they didn't want to have face-to-face classes, and I have potentially a fall class, and that should be the last class for me.
Oh, okay, so then you're a free man, huh?
Yeah, so right now I'm working about half-time, and then ham radio stuff the other half of the time. And also helping deal with, my wife has some health issues, so I take care of those things too.
No, I got it.
Yeah, really. Well, the other project I'm working on here is a project that won't die. That is my business partner's doing the firmware and I'm doing the hardware. And getting pretty much to the end of the line. There's not anything left to do. So that will be good, because that basically frees up all of my time to work on the Tangerine. So that ought to make tremendous progress here momentarily. But that project was supposed to be over a month ago, and it's still hanging on by the nail.
Yeah, I understand. I've been working most recently on I am very enamored with SVG once, at least the way it looks once it's done. And I've been working on both Go and JavaScript, more modern JavaScript, to produce the SVG codes. And it makes very clean graphs, very clean images. So once you get it in your head how it works, it's not too bad. But it took me a while to get my head around it, all the different pieces.
And what's SVG?
Scalable vector graphics, which is built into every web browser, but not many people use it because it's an extra language you have to learn.
Oh, okay. But it's already there on everybody's browser?
Yeah, it's kind of, it's different than OpenGL or that kind of stuff because it's not really GL. It's just the vector graphics. But if you want to, the thing is, everything is lines, it's not pixels.
Yeah, so that allows you to build fancy GUIs, right?
Yes, and that's what I'm trying, I'm putting in the effort, and part of it's being funded by university work, to build these pieces that are very clean, nice looking, and help build interfaces.
Sounds like fun. Sounds like it's right up your alley, although not what you were trained to do, but what you're doing anyway.
Well, I do it to, I built models of how trees grow early in my career, and then that whole area just kind of vaporized. Nobody wanted to pay for them anymore. Because I had two funding sources. One was the government didn't want to pay for that. And the other one was private industry, and they didn't want to pay for that. They basically took a different approach. Instead of learning to grow trees, they just buy trees and cut them up, and that works.
Let somebody else grow them, right?
Yeah, or let them grow by themselves.
Now, how do you mean how trees grow?
So trees have basically rules of how they increase in size, in dimensions, and by understanding the crowding or opening up of trees, you can change various dimensions of the tree, either the diameters, the size of the crowns, and it can control how many knots are in the tree or not. Oh. And essentially, it's all very clear once you figure it out, but it's kind of hard to explain to people. But it all works beautifully if you understand it. So that's what I spent most of my career working on.
Do you have any fractals involved in that?
I have fooled with fractals, but actually, the best thing is just 3D spatial components. The other thing that I did in my career is I figured out ways of 3D mapping existing forests with tools that were within, you know, not hundreds of thousands of dollars, but more like tens of thousands of dollars, so that other people could map it, not just a few scientists.
Yeah, I was curious because, you know, they use a lot of that sort of design for films, for animation and such.
Yeah, essentially what you're talking about is running ray tracing backwards. And that's what the engineering work that I'm doing.
Talking about how they draw trees and flowers and hair and things like that in computer animation now.
Yes. And I'm basically working on not only just drawing it, but then actually following the principles of how trees grow to make new sizes of trees.
Very interesting.
The project I'm doing at work in engineering is we're using normal cameras, but with telephoto lenses, from low-flying aircraft and taking pictures and recompositing it into point clouds, more or less equivalent to LiDAR, but actually there are many advantages to doing it with photographs. So you never thought a forester would do all these things.
Oh, I did. My uncle is a forester. Or was.
So I start talking about this with my forestry friends or the programming or sampling and all that kind of stuff. And a lot of the foresters glaze over. Or I talk about the forestry stuff and a lot of the engineers glaze over. So it's kind of, I just fell into this in-between space. And I also have a strong interest in Bayesian statistics. So that falls in there as well.
Well, to bring it back to the media topic at hand, and the FPGA, what language are you programming in?
Verilog. It's Altera. That's their bread and butter.
I've worked with it. Did some work on a TI data acquisition system, Verilog and Altera, but I have to admit I'm a VHDL guy, preferably. But it's all the same. All describes the same thing.
It's one of these things. People seem to, it's like a language. They're either Verilog or VHDL people, and it's very seldom that people switch back and forth. Although my son, when he was in engineering school, did learn both.
Yeah, well, I'm finding it's like PC and Mac. You got to learn both because they're both out there.
Well, you may be interested in these series of videos because Kurt was very good at Verilog programmer.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that would be of interest.
I'll look for the link and give it to you.
I am setting up the Zoom for next week now, so I'll have that link out shortly.
We're kind of past our 1 hour time frame, so I'm going to bid all of you a 73, or since I'm transplanted into Alabama, I should say I'm going to bid y'all 73. But anyway, enjoyed it, and we'll catch you next week, if not sooner. Maybe for a J Clear.
73, Bill.
73.
73. 73, Bill.
73, Bill. Bye-bye.
Nathaniel, do you have to explain that to Veronica?
The Zoom?
No, 73.
I'm back. I can hear. I figured out my microphone troubles.
Oh, yeah. Dave was asking if you know what 73 means.
Oh, yeah. Best wishes, right?
Very good.
She's the winner.
She is a winner. We have to work on getting her ham license, though. All we were planning on having a test session at the HAMSCI workshop at the university, but then that got shut down. And so hopefully things will open up again. But I know Christina Collins has also been working on trying to get us the ability to do remote testing through W5YI. So I'll have to see if she made any progress on that.
Did you see the drive-through testing they were doing in Texas?
No, I didn't see that.
You basically drive in, they set a chair down in front of your car, and you sit there and you take the test in full view of the examiners, and you get back in your car and drive to the waiting area while they grade your test, and then you get a pass or fail.
I like that.
Oh my gosh. That almost sounds kind of like driving test, just without the driving.
Either that or like those drive-through weddings out in Las Vegas. What's that?
Do you know of New England SciTech?
I don't think I do.
They have been the pioneer for ARRL of the remote testing.
Oh, yeah, I did. I read about that.
Yeah. I'm actually part of the group. I've been sitting in on their meetings. They have meetings Tuesday night.
Oh, that's really cool. Have you been involved with their testing at all?
I have not, but they've been talking quite a bit about how it's being done.
Yeah, we'd really like to be able to do that too. As I said, Christina Collins was trying to go through W5YI. I asked her about it last week, and she said she was still waiting for a phone call from them. But I would be happy to team up with the team or figure out some way to, if someone would show me how to do that, I'd be more than happy to do it. I'm a VE, and we certainly have a number of other VEs who'd be willing to do it and help test some of these college students.
Right. Yeah, I'm a VE as well.
Yes, so am I.
I am as well.
Do you know, David, would you be able to find out more information about how we might be able to do a remote test?
What I should do is put you in touch with them. Let them tell you about it.
Okay, if it's feasible for us to do it, I would love to do it. And certainly for people like Veronica and Dev and some of the other Scranton people, I know some of the Case Western people that they want to test, it'd be really nice to be able to do that.
And Elizabeth wants to take the test too.
Yeah, it would be great because we have all these people who are starting to join us now and who are all over. And it'd be really nice to be able to help them out with that.
Well, it makes sense if you can get credit for course credit for online. You should be able to get a license online.
I would think so. Let's see if I have this link set up now.
I posted the Verilog link there. I would, unless you have a lot of old hardware, I wouldn't worry about the WMV format. I'd go to the MP4.
Sounds good.
Yeah, so Dave, have you heard about the new, because I'm not going to be able to remember it now, but there's a guy that's written a FPGA JTAG programmer that runs on a Raspberry Pi.
No, I hadn't heard about that.
Yeah, and there's a new format that Cortis supports. That I think it's one of the JAM formats, but it supports it natively, so you can generate the file, and then the Raspberry Pi can program the FPGA through JTAG pins.
Oh, that's nice. It makes it, you don't have to buy that little box just to program.
Yeah, and the thing is, it makes it, Intel supports it. So it is, they tell you how to do it in an app note.
Very good.
Let me see if I can find it here. Here's a guy that made a network JTAG programmer out of a Raspberry Pi.
Is it Atomic Objects?
That could be. This one, I haven't found it yet, the one I was thinking of.
Inexpensive Ethernet JTAG programmer with Raspberry Pi and OpenOCD.
Yep, I saw that, but that's not the one I was looking for. This is not an Ethernet-based one. It has to connect. It connects some I/O pins on the Pi directly to the JTAG pins.
Just to confirm, 9 p.m. Eastern right now is still 0100 Zulu, right?
Correct. That's correct.
Correct.
All right, great.
And it will be until November.
Great.
Here's one that's Synthos.
It's called Staple, STAPL. Here's the link down there.
Oh, very good. I'll spend some time looking at this. I have been avoiding spending a lot of time on FPGAs till you get closer to having some pieces to work on.
Yeah, I think once I get the... what I've been doing is I've been building the project for the data engine, the FPGA project, as I go, so I can test out the clock connections and make sure everything's going to work when I get real hardware. So what's going to happen is as soon as I send the hardware off for building, I'll pretty much have the framework already built and know that it will connect up. And so I'll be most of the way there to having something that we can play with as far as getting the programmer to work.
Well, when you and your partner get some code that you're testing on the Max 10s, maybe I can help or at least learn what you're up to.
Okay, yes, definitely. I figured what we'd start out with would be two different programs, one flashing the LEDs one way or swirling them one way, one swirling the others, something easy to identify, and that way we could test the programmer with two code bases so you can tell the difference, so you can tell if you really loaded the new code or not.
Yes, that's a good idea.
So something really dumb that loads really easily and quickly, and then we can test it. And then as we get what we think is working, then we can load a more robust program in the other half of... Because we got two images in the Max 10, so we can leave one alone, and it'll be the bootloader, and then the other one will be the working code.
That's good.
All right, guys. I just sent the Zoom invitation out to the listservs.
Well, thank you for doing that. And Nathaniel, if you don't, for some reason, don't show up, you know, we can make sure the group gets called. So don't feel obligated to be the person that's there running it. If somebody else can, if we can join in and just use it.
Yeah, that would be good. So I have it set so that you can join ahead of time. So you absolutely can use it. So, and as long as I'm not using my Zoom account, it will be active. And the only time I'm going to be using the Zoom account at this time is for this particular meeting. So that's no problem. I can also, what you can't do without me right now is you can't make recordings and you can't moderate stuff. However, I have a solution to that. I can give select people, so probably you, Dave, and Scotty, I can send you my host key. And then when you log in, it's like a PIN number. You can reclaim the host role using that PIN number. So if I weren't able to make it for whatever reason, you could still record and have moderation abilities.
Yes. And Mike said that he could make a voice recording at least of things. I asked him after we had a big discussion last time of using Zoom, and he said he was convinced he could make the voice recording.
Yes, that's, I hate to lose that capability.
Well, when you do the Zoom recordings, it automatically does the video recording and audio recording, and it actually transcribes the text, so it does speech to text as well.
Oh, that's good. Well. I did want to make sure that we include Mike in this conversation, that because he's been reliable and always there. He's been the stalwart of things, and you hardly ever hear him because he doesn't talk that much.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, certainly you can keep recording the audio however you want and do whatever you would like to do, but these facilities are there.
So, Dave, do we have any idea of how many people listen to the recording offline?
I don't know, but I'm amazed at how many do. With Open HPSDR, there's like five of us that show up, but there's probably 100, 150 people that listen to it.
Yeah, especially if they're in the different time zone and it's not convenient. It's much nicer to be able to listen to it. So, yeah, I hope we can continue that. And thanks, Mike, for doing that. And if I don't know, is that something that... Is the format going to be the same out of Zoom so people can still play it back like they do now?
Well, the recording is a recording, I assume. It's like in an MP4 format.
I'll send you a link to the HamSci telecon we had on Thursday, and you can see exactly what it looks like.
But I guess what I'm saying is, can we split the audio out so we can have just an audio recording so it's small?
Yeah, they do that by default.
Well, so, you know, the other thing that I'm concerned about is we're still a few months out from DCC, but all this, the way we get good at running a video conference is practice, right, Nathaniel?
That's right.
So this Absolutely. Is a good practice.
Yes, and... We just can't wait till a week before the thing and then try to whip it all out. Now, Nathaniel did wonderful, and I don't know how much experience he had, but, you know, using it in teaching makes it a lot easier to be comfortable. And like I said, I have a Zoom account, but because of my university stuff is not associated with this particular grant, I shouldn't be using that particular account.
Yeah, well, Elizabeth had a question as whether we'd be using it from now on. I guess it depends on how it turns out next week, right, Nathaniel?
Yeah, I think it'll work out fine. I mean, people have really liked it for the HamSci telecons, I think. I just put the link to the audio for the HamSci telecon in the chat there.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't want to confuse people, but I've been experimenting with some of the other platforms. And, you know, as long as you're not running a big conference, there are many similarities between the different platforms.
Yeah, we seldom have more than a dozen here.
A platform like Jitsi, which is free and open source, can handle what we're doing here, but it would not handle something like DCC.
But Zoom is nice because can't you just click on the link that Nathaniel sends out and you really don't have to do anything if you want to join in the browser?
Well, they all can send out a link and then you just click in that if you want to do it in the browser, yes.
So maybe in some ways easier than this.
Oh, yes. Our TeamSpeak is 10, 15-year-old technology.